Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. On today's program, we're going to be talking to Peter Brackney. He's an attorney who is very interested in history. We're going to be talking about the oldest house in Nicholasville, the Metcalf House, and more specifically, Reverend Metcalf and what he meant to our town. We'll do that right after this word.
Do you have a community event that could benefit from the exposure of Jess FM? Well, let us know about it because our free public service announcements are part of our mission to help serve the Jessamine County community. Email the event details to will@jessfm.com. That's will@jessfm.com. It's just that simple. Let Jess FM have an impact on your event's success. We are Jessamine County's hometown radio station, 105.9 Jess FM.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday as we talk about things and people and places and all kinds of stuff that have to do with Jessamine County. Today we're going to focus on Nicholasville and its beginnings. And I asked a fellow to come in who is a history buff. He's an attorney. His name's Peter Brackney. He is very interested in the beginnings and the history and things like that that have to do with our community. And so I thought today we would talk about a fellow named John Metcalf who was very instrumental in getting Nicholasville started, and the fact that the house in which he lived still stands. It's the oldest home in Nicholasville city limits, and just information about that. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Glad that you could come, and this is going to be an interesting show because there's so much information about not only, well, not necessarily about this house so much as it is about the guy that was there, and the John Metcalf, the Reverend Methodist?
Methodist minister.
Minister, and what all he was involved with. This home, to start with, is located over on First Street.
Right, 209 First Street at the corner of Elm.
Now, you can see it today, but it doesn't look exactly like it looked in what year?
Well, it was probably built around, according to the PVA records, the house was built in 1791.
Okay.
But Bennett Young's 1898 history of the county and some other sources seem to indicate perhaps a 1798 build.
Okay.
So somewhere during the 1790s, a log cabin was constructed there on the property. Of course, the property was much larger at that point and was subdivided down to the small lot that it is now.
I'm assuming that at that point in time that there at least was some kind of a dirt road through here. I mean, we didn't have a paved main street and things like that, but I'm assuming that there was some kind of a traveled path going maybe from Lexington to Point South. It wasn't that he just popped up and built a log cabin in a field.
Right. There was the main street that we have today would have probably been part of the old pike that would have come, you know, from Lexington towards Point South, towards Danville. And so there was a crossroads at that point, maybe another road out towards the eastern end of the county.
Right.
And it was here that some houses and some cabins were being built, and that's really what gave Nicholasville its start.
Now, one thing that we might remember, and we need to remind people, at this point in time, Kentucky wasn't even Kentucky as far as being a commonwealth. It wasn't a formed commonwealth. We were Virginia.
We were originally Virginia.
Yeah.
Of course, became a commonwealth in June of 1792. So right at the time this house was built, whether 1791, right before Kentucky became a commonwealth, or in the early days of Kentucky's history, this house would have been built. Of course, prior to becoming Kentucky a commonwealth, we were, as you mentioned, a county of Virginia, Kentucky County. They were eventually divided into three counties, Fayette being one of them, which is where Lexington is located.
Right.
It was in 1798 then that Jessamine was carved out of Fayette.
Well, at one point in time, Patrick Henry was governor of the area that we now occupy here in Jessamine County. But eventually, it became Kentucky, 1792, as you mentioned, a commonwealth. And then, of course, all 120 counties, I guess, started getting carved up somehow along the way. Jessamine County came around, and that's a whole nother story in itself, but today we focus mainly on Nicholasville. So tell us about this Reverend Metcalf. Where did he show up from? How did this all come about?
So Reverend Metcalf came originally from an area in eastern Virginia, kind of a county just to the west of Norfolk, south of Richmond on the North Carolina border, from a well-to-do Virginia family. Mm-hmm. Kind of traveled through Virginia a little ways, spent some time, I think, in Charlottesville, and then ultimately came across to Kentucky as the Methodists were moving across the mountains, across the Alleghenies, mm-hmm. Appalachian Mountains, where the circuit riding ministers would have been here. So it was in 1790 that the Methodists had their first conference in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And that was out at Masterson Station area in Fayette County, out Leestown Road, 26 miles from the Kentucky River.
And so somehow he found this patch of ground, or said, "Well, this will be a good place to live."
So it kind of ended up here. Yeah. The story on Reverend Metcalf is very spotty. You know, there's only a limited amount of history,
right.
So not sure exactly why specifically he came to this spot. But Bishop Asbury had wanted to create educational opportunities. The Francis Asbury, of course, for whom Asbury College, mm-hmm. Asbury University, mm-hmm. is named. He wanted educational opportunities for training ministers, for training children, mm-hmm. So that they could learn. So Reverend Metcalf became the first principal of Bethel Academy, which was created probably, and students started appearing around 1794. So kind of see the timeline there. Of,
right.
The first Methodist conference in 1790, and then a couple years later, this school develops.
And, of course, the Bethel Academy, I'm assuming, is out of the Methodist Church in a way to teach children and continue their mission. One of the things that I think you mentioned to me outside of the program maybe was the fact that Bethel Academy wasn't just one. There was more than one, and very interesting some of the story about the academy itself.
Yeah, so there were really three Bethel Academies over time. The first one is this one that Asbury kind of led the mm-hmm. formation of, and that Reverend Metcalf was the first principal. There was three letters that kind of confuse the issue of when perhaps the student started, and we can get into that a little bit later.
Okay.
But the Kentucky Gazette, which was Kentucky's first newspaper, mm-hmm. had an advertisement in November of 1794 advertising for students to come to this new academy that was located on 100 acres, just overlooking the Kentucky River.
Mm-hmm.
And the advertisement suggested that annual tuition was $6.
But
$6 doesn't sound like much today, but in the late 1700s, that was a significant
chunk. And you were
significant
well-to-do families,
sure.
were the ones that afforded that. And when you mentioned the 100 acres, you know, we still have a community called Bethel, and mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's where that name came from, down in the southwest part of the county.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
All right. So that was the first one, and this guy was the head of it. So that was his job.
He was
the principal.
The rules, I think, are fascinating.
Yeah?
So we still have some of the student rules that relate to the original Bethel Academy. They were in a study and over at Cokesbury College by a professor there who had studied and found mm-hmm. some of these records. So a gentleman by the name of Herbert Livingston did a report in an Asbury publication back in 1994 and laid out some of, but not all of, the rules. Mm-hmm. And I think they're worth looking at.
Sure.
So the students had to rise at 5 a.m. That was wake-up call.
Okay.
And then a period of study and prayer and different things. They, of course, had chores to do to keep the academy going. It mm-hmm. was not heavily staffed. Bedtime was at 9 o'clock, quote, without fail. Their time was very regimented, very strict.
Almost military.
Almost military. One rule that's quoted, and I'll read from the rule, is, "Students shall be indulged with nothing which the world calls play. Let this rule be observed with the strictest nicety. For those who play when they are young will play when they are old." So idle hands make the devil's playground, I think, is kind of the concept there.
Wow. And they paid $6.
They paid $6 for that.
Rules.
And I may have mentioned off the air, if you remember, students had to lie on mattresses because feather beds were considered too plush, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. So remember, a mattress in that day was not a, like they were sleeping on over at UK memory foam and that sort of thing. It would have been a straw mattress.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
very comfortable.
Yes, of course. So you'd felt the bed frame very well through that mattress. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So, but you said this was the original. Why was there more? Why did we have three?
So there was an interesting story. Reverend Metcalf, who was by all intent, a founder of Nicholasville, really,
mm-hmm.
he may have had a little bit of a darker side
mm-hmm.
as well. And it was probably, like I said, the school started in 1794. It seems that around 1803, perhaps, that Reverend Metcalf may have started another Bethel Academy.
On the side?
On the side, in his own home, the home that we're talking about today.
All right. So we're going to find out, you're going to tell us, I'm sure, how he was able to do that and the consequences of it.
Yeah,
so we've got the main one going that everybody knows about, and now this guy in his own home says, maybe I'll just do something here.
Right. So he had somewhat departed from the original Bethel Academy at this point. He was not running two schools concurrently.
Oh, okay, okay.
It seems like he was really involved with the original Bethel Academy for only the first 4 years,
all
until
right.
1798, which is an important year for him, which I think we'll touch into mm-hmm. in a moment. Mm-hmm. So around 1802, 1803, he seems to have started the second Bethel Academy. And it was not taken very well by the Methodist establishment, as you can imagine, a competitor school.
Right.
And it seems not only did he start a competitive school, but he may have absconded with some assets of the original school in starting his new school.
That's probably what upset
them. That probably was not a wise move. And the consequences were pretty stiff. There was a trial. Not a court trial, but an ecclesiastical church trial, where he was charged with removing property of the academy without knowledge or consent of the school trustees, not giving information or providing an accounting of these assets. And as a result, he was deprived of services of the church, his role in the church, basically excommunicated for a period of 12 months. An interesting observation about that trial, due process is not the concept that we have in our court system is not something that you would necessarily have in an ecclesiastical court.
Mm-hmm.
He was not present for the trial.
Oh, really?
And so he was charged and convicted, essentially, without him being present. So he was there removed from the church then for a period of a year. The third Bethel Academy was started. The church had kind of folded its Bethel Academy.
And the
first one. Mm-hmm. And then around 1820 or so, there was another Bethel Academy that began here in Nicholasville proper, another one. And that one lasted throughout much of the 1800s.
Okay. Well, this guy was involved with that and possibly came here to kind of get that going. But while he was here, for some reason, out of all the people and all the settlers in this area, this was the dude that kind of came up with, well, let's make a town.
Yeah.
And is there any rhyme or reason why it was him? I mean, did he just say, I'm going to do it?
All right, well, he may have had something to do with buying a couple of properties right close. First and Elm, what then would have been originally laid out as West Street, was First Street.
Mm-hmm.
So he bought a couple of lots, and so he therefore had a vested interest in the property values going up.
Okay.
And so in 1798, that is when he did the first survey of what would become Nicholasville. We had a couple of crossroads, some cabins being built, different things.
So he drew all this out.
He drew out what became Nicholasville.
But he was a preacher.
He was a preacher. So the original surveyors may have really done that on the side. And that also led to a lot of legal debates.
Well,
and
I guess,
conflict.
Because especially back then, there is over in our office, we have a framed copy of a land grant of somewhere here in this county that is signed by Patrick Henry. It was back before Kentucky became a commonwealth. And it's interesting to read those old plats and those old deeds, because they don't go by, you know, this property is 300 feet from the center line of the road.
Right.
They go by, it goes 300 feet from the crook in the tree on the west part of the creek down to where this big rock sits. That's how they describe things.
Right.
And I'm assuming that could leave to some very vague and a lot of disputes.
Sure. So you had overlapping property lines,
sure.
A whole bunch of conflict, which is going to lead to litigation.
Yeah.
You know, you think about Henry Clay, most of his practice was dealing with these kinds of land disputes.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Boone, of course, important name in Kentucky history, he did a lot of surveying.
Yeah.
Ended up being rather poor in his end days because of all the litigation that he suffered from his
surveying. Wow.
And again, the tree got struck by lightning, so hey, we didn't know where that line went.
Exactly. So this dude owns some property down in this area, and I guess he just popped up one day and said, okay, I'm going to put a town here. Is that basically what happened?
The town was already kind of, you know, like I said, we were at a crossroads.
Yeah.
So a couple of roads that passed through here.
Yeah.
So it quote, made sense to try and continue that and turn it into a town. Maybe it would be the county seat. Maybe it wouldn't be. That was always up for grabs in the early days. But so he created this survey, and there were what I think is more important than just the survey is the naming of Nicholasville.
Okay.
There's a gentleman by the name of George Nicholas, Colonel George Nicholas. He was a Civil War veteran, and Colonel Nicholas was a fascinating character. Colonel Nicholas, he was like Colonel Metcalf, who was born in Virginia, and he was ultimately, as he came across and came to Kentucky, he became the father of Kentucky's Constitution. He authored Kentucky's very first Constitution.
Really?
So in his days in Virginia, it's worth noting, he spent some time, as did Metcalf, in the Charlottesville area, and he became acquainted with, this is Colonel Nicholas, became acquainted with and friends with a guy named James Madison,
who was our fourth president,
and the author of the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, wow.
So they had some close ties there.
Were they? You said they were attorneys? Were they military only? Were they farmers? Do we know?
Colonel Nicholas was an attorney.
Okay.
In fact, he was a rather important attorney.
Yeah.
So when he came from Virginia to Kentucky, he came for a very specific purpose.
Okay.
President Washington appointed Colonel Nicholas to be the first United States attorney for the District of Kentucky. And I say the District of Kentucky because we're pre-1792.
Right.
We were a part of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Right.
So under the Judiciary Act of 1789, Kentucky became its own judicial district.
Okay.
You know, now we have the Eastern District of
right.
Kentucky and the
right.
Western District of Kentucky.
Right.
That used to be a district of
Virginia.
Well, it used to be a district of Kentucky, and that district of Kentucky dated back all the way to prior to Kentucky being a state.
So he was a pretty well-known and well-to-do guy.
Well-respected individual.
And this Metcalf, Reverend Metcalf, knew him, I guess, was friends with him.
And they knew each other, again, all the way back from their days in Virginia.
Yeah.
And so those three letters that I had mentioned earlier, they were sent from John Metcalf to George Nicholas.
All right.
And when I say that there were three letters, there was really only one letter. But today we have three versions of this letter that exist.
How could that happen?
Well, you know, I imagine over time there may have been just a misreading. The original letter would be lost to history. So you may have had someone transcribing the letter.
I see.
They may have looked at it. So the dates are not that far off. And that's why we see
that they are different.
Three different dates.
There
are three different dates. One says January 13th, 1794. Another says January 14th, 1794. And the other says June 13th, 1794. So a period of a few months. The distinction is not huge.
Yeah.
It goes back again to when the Bethel Academy started. But it shows, obviously, a relationship between Nicholas and with Metcalf as it relates to what was going on between the two. What's interesting about the letters is the anomaly of these dates.
Well, what is in the letters to start with? What's the subject?
The subject of the letters is that Metcalf has taken charge of Bethel Academy.
Okay.
And that he kind of regrets that he's been neglecting some of his other affairs in Lexington, and Nicholas is kind of taking care of some of his other affairs in Lexington. So it shows the relationship between these two.
Okay.
It shows that Metcalf had tremendous respect for Nicholas to obviously charge him with his affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Bennett Young's history, every source seems to indicate these two had a very close relationship. Mm-hmm. Metcalf would have been a strong supporter of Nicholas and Nicholas's projects.
Okay. Now, the anomaly you said about the dates.
Oh, sure. The dates... 1794. All of these are 1794. When you used to write a letter, there may be a few listeners who remember writing a letter. Of course,
right.
It doesn't happen
it's
much
all
anymore.
Text now, yes.
You would put the date at the top along with the location for where the letter was written.
Yes.
All of the letters said Jessamine County, Kentucky.
But that couldn't be.
It couldn't be because it was 1794, and we didn't become a county until 1798 or 99
when
we became effective. So there clearly is some issue with these letters.
Okay, and it could possibly, I guess, be that somebody looked at a 9 and it wasn't written well, and they thought it was a 4. Is that
could be
anybody?
It
who
could
knows?
Be one of the letters, the one from June, also references Nicholasville, Jessamine County, as being the source of the letter.
Which couldn't be. Either.
Which couldn't be because John Metcalf, when he did his survey in 1798, wrote another letter in September of that year to his good friend, Colonel Nicholas. And it said, I have the great honor of telling you that we have named a city after you, Nicholasville. And so Metcalf is the one who named Nicholasville, yeah. In honor of his good friend.
Boy, he just kind of took over the reins and pulled it all, the horse down the road by himself, didn't he?
I mean, I reckon, of course,
there's no way us to know this, but I wonder if he had any opposition saying, you know, now, wait a minute. I'd rather name it Millertown. I got a buddy I like over here, too. I wonder if that went on. I'm sure
it did. There doesn't seem to be as much debate over perhaps the naming of the town again. Partly in due to the great respect that everyone did have for George Nicholas. But the location that he chose, that did remain debate. And there's a lot of litigation that occurred and infighting that went on in the designation of this space as being the, this crossroads being the what became the county seat of Jessamine County.
Right.
There was an attempt by some to make it closer to Lexington, perhaps in the distant country where Walmart sits today. That would have been way out in the country in those days. And so there was the folks that lived and owned property in that immediate area. You know, you think about the county seat being located on or adjacent to your farm. What's that going to do to the value of your farm?
Exactly.
So there was a vested interest that folks had in getting the county seat at their crossroads.
Do we know, and maybe you and I both have some information, I'm assuming that once this was all done, settlers came in and businesses popped up and they probably had a mercantile and things like that. Probably not many, though. And the thing that comes to my mind is the street scene in the old Western movies where you basically have a little row of houses or buildings on one side and you have one on the other side and there's nothing else around. It's just because I think you need to realize, folks, when he talks about Nicholasville, at that point in time, don't think it was anything at all as big as what it is now. I mean, it was just a couple of blocks, maybe, I'm sure, or three, and each side had something, and that was it.
Yeah. The you look at the 1802 plat, a few hundred lots. You started from basically Walnut Street, not even all the way to Elm. What we have is Walnut to Elm, and a block on either side being East and West Streets.
And that was it.
That was pretty much it. And then outside of that, you were in the country. I think there may have been a blockhouse here. I can't remember if there was a blockhouse in Nicholasville or not. But, in those early days, you had the threat of Indian attacks. You had the threat of that. So you wanted to be in as close of a proximity as you could to other settlers.
Right.
And going a block, two blocks away with high cane growing, you'd run the risk of being dangerously alone.
And isn't that just hard to even imagine?
Yeah.
If you're listening to this program and you can sit in your car or wherever you're at and think, oh my gosh, there was Indians here. Oh yeah. we were frontier.
Mm-hmm.
This was the wild, at one point in time where we live was the Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
And they had to contend with all that. In fact, I think in some of the information that we had, I had mentioned the first fort that was built in the county was built in 1779 down in Keene. Now, why in the world would you need a fort, Doug? Well, you got Indians and you got to have protection.
That's right. It was Keene that had the fort, not Nicholasville.
And, yeah.
Of course, we say we had to contend, the settlers had to contend with the Indians, and it may also be easily said the other way around.
Well, right.
The natives were here long before
and they had to contend with us. This guy, Metcalf, he forms the town. Of course, Nicholasville was formed before it was incorporated. There is a difference in that.
It is.
And I know that in reading some of the history, that wasn't until
1812.
And I guess when that happens, that is when it legally becomes a city to levy taxes or anything like that, I guess, is when you incorporate what brings all that about.
Right. So in those days, the General Assembly in Frankfurt would have approved the charter for a city of Nicholasville. And so that would create it as a governmental entity apart and distinct from the county itself.
Some of the information that's in this book, the Jessamine County book from, let's see, was this the 175th anniversary in 70? No, this was in 93.
The 93.
This 93 book. Robin Fain, who is a distant cousin of mine, wrote that the first charter was passed. There was also a second charter in 1823. This is interesting because this gave the free white male inhabitants the right to elect trustees. So I'm assuming that was the formation of our first city government, election style.
I would say so. And you mentioned it was a free
free white male.
Male.
Yes.
So
a limited
electorate there.
Exactly. Exactly. And speaking of that, and getting back to Metcalf, now, was he, because being a Methodist and all that, you know, we have to bring up the subject that there was slavery at that time, things like that. What was his connection into that world?
So I think going back to the relationship with George Nicholas is important. Mm-hmm. When George Nicholas, Colonel Nicholas, wrote Kentucky's first constitution, he enshrined in it the protection of slavery, ensuring that Kentucky would, at least for the time, be a slave state. And so Colonel Nicholas, from a well-to-do Virginia family, was a very pro-slavery individual. Reverend Metcalf was also from a well-to-do Virginia family, close friend and a proponent of Colonel Nicholas's project. So it is believed to be that Reverend Metcalf would have aligned himself in a pro-slavery position. Now,
would that not be a problem being a minister?
In those days, the Methodist Church, based off of John Wesley's teaching, as the founder of Methodism, and Francis Asbury, the bishop for the area, the Methodist bishop, both were very anti-slavery.
Yeah.
And so there was general conference rules in place that prohibited either Methodist ministers or the laity even from owning slaves at that time. Mm. So some of the Yankee settlers that came, you know, from northern areas of the colonies that settled here, that they continued to abide and appreciate those rules, and perhaps some of those that came from Virginia and the Carolinas that settled here and turned to Methodism, they may not have liked those rules quite as much.
Yeah.
And as you go through the General Conference rules, they kind of had a slight changing over time.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Reverend Metcalf, by the time he passed away, the rules had changed. I'm not sure when he left the active ministry.
Yeah.
The rules changed in 1808, saying ministers can hold slaves as long as it's just by inheritance, that they didn't purchase them.
Okay.
By the time Reverend Metcalf died in 1820, though, he owned, according to the documents at the clerk's office, he owned either six or seven slaves. So two of those his wife had inherited, and then obviously it seems that he acquired some.
He must have. And it may have been in that 12 months he was excommunicated from the church.
It may have been.
Do we know what happened to him? I know you said that his history is spotty.
Very spotty.
Yeah.
He did, like I said, he died in 1820 here in Nicholasville. I'm not sure where he is buried. I'm not sure if he's at Maple Grove or, you know, perhaps he was buried there on the homestead site. I'd have to check Maple Grove's records.
Yeah. Interesting story, and it's interesting that the history that links us to where to all this, where it started, the Virginia and the Nicholas and the whole thing. And you know what goes through my mind is that just as hard as it is for us to kind of imagine how it must have been to live in those times and to have a Nicholasville that was basically two blocks or three blocks long by one block wide, and that was it. And we're talking about, I'm not just talking about business, folks. I'm talking about housing and everything. That was it. To have to worry about the Indians and to have to worry about, you know, traveling. Gosh, what kind of journey would it have been to get to Lexington? I mean, you're talking in a horse and buggy or on a horse.
On horseback.
You know, a good time to take you there. But as hard as it would be to imagine those days, can you imagine what these guys would think if they could appear today and see what it has become?
Oh, they'd be blown away.
I mean, I'm sure he would be very amazed to see that the part of the home that he started is still standing.
Right.
But to just see the progress and forget the technology stuff. I'm just talking about the size of the town. You know, I can remember.
Although they would be shocked by our horseless buggies.
Exactly. You're exactly right. But growing up in Jessamine County, you know, I can remember a day when the site where Edgewood Baptist Church is, it was a cornfield. Mm. And when you got to the position of where what is now Family Dollar, which used to be Skidmore's Liquor when I was growing up, when you got to that point, and on the north end, when you got to about where Car Wash is, you were way out in the county. Now, that was during my life. That was my growing up. That was out in the county. These folks, it was going a block. So can you just imagine what they would think if they could see? And I mean, that's that way with every town.
Sure.
The settlers, what they would think and how, what it would become. And would they ever envision it when it would become something like that?
I don't think they could have envisioned it. You know, you look at just, and I think to ignore the technology, it makes it more difficult.
That's right.
There's no way that you could take an agrarian society as we industrialized.
Yeah.
The need for the growth that we've had and the ability to travel the way we can has really shaped, obviously, how our developments have occurred.
You're exactly right.
As far as him recognizing the house, I can touch on that for a moment as well, because as I mentioned, it started off as just a log cabin.
Right.
There was an atlas of Jessamine County in 1877 that shows the outlines of buildings. And so now the house is really a U-shape.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see that as early as 1877. So we know that those wings were added to the original log cabin at some point prior to 1877. In 1949, there actually, if you look at the house, there's a plaque on the front that calls it Metcalf Place.
Mm-hmm.
And the plaque indicates that it was purchased by John Reynolds in 1949 and that he converted it into three apartments, which I believe is how it is still today.
That home went on to be in the ownership of a fellow named Joe McMurtry, who a lot of our listeners will recognize because he started out as a druggist here in town, along with Buddy Hager at Hemphill's Pharmacy, went on to open his own drug store, the Drug Mart, which closed just about a year ago, but was actually one of the first businesses in the Edgewood Plaza after Thompson's Food Town, and stayed there for, gosh, many, many years. But Joe McMurtry, who has passed since, that was part of his estate. Should we mention that interestingly enough, that this home has just all of a sudden come for sale?
Yeah, just a couple of days ago, I walked by the house twice in the course of the day in preparation for the show.
Yeah.
And, one in the morning, there's no sign in front. And by the evening, when I'm walking by with my oldest, there's a sign. And sure enough, the property appears to be for sale. So.
Well, I certainly hope whoever purchases that recognizes and has the ability to know the history
absolutely
of that home and to understand, yes, it is wood and mortar and nails, but it's more than that. That is where this town got its beginnings, so to speak. And it was probably in a portion of that home that this survey was drawn and these letters were written, and the one to Colonel Nicholas saying the town is going to be named after you. A lot of things happened there. That's one thing, and I don't know, maybe I'm just corny, but I'm one of those guys. A couple of 3 years ago, I'll tell you what it was, we decided to go to Washington, D.C., and as luck would have it, we were there on fall break the same week of the government shutdown.
Mm.
All right? So there was a lot of things you couldn't do. Well, because of that, it forced us to do things that we probably wouldn't have done otherwise, and we ended up at Mount Vernon. And I don't know how many people listening have ever gone to there, the home of course, of George Washington. But as I walk out through in those doors and out on that porch overlooking the Potomac, it just kind of dawned on me that these same floors that I'm walking on walked feet of the men who put this nation together.
Absolutely.
They stood where I'm standing. And it kind of gave me a little queasy feeling to think, I'm standing on this porch probably in the same place where people like Jefferson and Ben Franklin and Washington and all those guys stood looking out thinking, let's do this.
Right.
And I don't know, some people, I'm sure my kids would look at me and say, Dad, that is the corniest thing I've ever heard. But I hope somebody that gets this house has that same kind of feeling that I do, that they understand that when they're in that home, what it means to us here in Jessamine County, especially Nicksville.
It's a way that you can still touch history. It makes history tangible.
Yes.
To think that not only the application of him,
right,
of Reverend Metcalf, but his close friend was the author of Kentucky's Constitution, he was close friends with James Madison, the author of our country's Constitution, 2 degrees away, and we've got the founding of our national documents.
Yeah, very interesting. All right, well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We can't get into everything today that we thought about getting into, so next week, I hope you can join me again, because we're going to talk about next week another old home that is not standing anymore, but it was the second oldest. In fact, we lost it to a fire three years ago, but it has a link to some royalty, and a very interesting story. We'll get into that, and we'll do that on next week's program.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Doug.
My thanks to Peter for coming in this morning and talking about some of the history of Nicholasville and Jessamine County. Appreciate you coming in also. We'll do it again next Saturday morning at 11, All Things Jessamine. Don't forget, I have an early morning show every weekday from 6 to 8. We get you up and going at 105.9 Jess FM.